We have a misplaced tendency to focus on presenteeism instead of productivity. So I need to see you in your chair to make sure I know you're working. Otherwise, I don't trust that you're working. I've talked with many leaders who outright actually admit that. Then there's also all kinds of, monitoring software that companies are using, trying to see if their people are working and counting the keystrokes, et cetera. All those sort of things that are happening. That's not the boss.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Dr. Elise Cortez. She is the Chief Purpose Officer at Elise Cortez and Associates, a management consulting firm specializing in the activation of meaning. That should make your head rattle because it's awesome. And purpose. So she doesn't just talk about it, folks. She is about it. And she is also an inspirational speaker, social scientist, author, and host of the Working on Purpose podcast. So like, listen to this and then go tune into hers. We're excited to have you, Dr. Cortez. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kenny. It's so fun to be on the other end of the mic.
It's weird how you can adjust. I've had to pop into some people's recording studio and I was like, where's my controls? I just do what you tell me. And I start getting weird and fidgety and making odd jokes. But I appreciate like your humility and just stepping into the discomfort of being on the other side. Well, as I start every episode, I would like to know, what is on your mind?
Yeah, so I, as a social scientist and somebody who is fixated on the world of work, I am really, really focused on the state of the workplace today. What's going on in the world of work? I find that there is so much conversation and chatter about it, and yet, and so many differing opinions about it and different experiences about it. And I really would like to be able to see some changes in some of those things. But that's what I'm really focused on, is the world of work, the state of today's workforce.
Gotcha. Which I mean, anybody who pops on to say LinkedIn or any news feed really for more than 5 seconds is going to see 100 different opinions about the current state of work and what should be, could be, shouldn't be. What's something in the world of work that's really caught your attention lately?
Yeah, I'm really fixated on this whole notion of the even larger companies, even Zoom, for gosh sakes, in insisting that people come back to work in the office. I think that is absolutely incredible that we're seeing such a fixation on what to do about virtual workplace, what to do about the remote workforce. And so, in fact, Kenny, I am co-hosting a breakfast in Dallas on September 29th, and what Work Proud and I have done is we've convened a group of, let's say about a dozen chief human resource officers, people to talk about this very thing. And I want to get their perspective. I want to call their minds. I want to hear, what are you guys doing? What's working? What's not working? Because there is an awful lot of chatter about it. Not a lot of consensus. And I think a lot of those things that are being discussed are actually missing the mark.
Interesting. So when it's interesting that you point out Zoom, that I found that a little mind blowing. I was like, the company that most people would point to, it's almost become like the verb for video calls now, like much like Google is for doing a web search. It's like, yeah, we're just going to hop on a Zoom. And you say that even if you probably meant Google Meet or Microsoft Teams, God forbid. Yes, I am biased against Microsoft products. Send me an email about it. I will delete it from my Gmail. But I'm curious, with there being so much back and forth, do you think it's people are guessing at the right thing? Do you think any of these companies actually have a strong, even research-based opinion about it? Or do you think that it's coming from a place of maybe insecurity? Like, if I can't see them, are they working? That's a classic statement I've heard leveled against remote culture. Or do you think it's something else that's causing the tension?
Great question, Kenny. There's a lot in there. I think there's a few things happening here. I think one, I don't know that there's a whole lot of maybe data. People are trying to find data, I think. But I think what's really driving the push to come back into the office is a few things. I think one, we have a misplaced tendency to focus on presenteeism instead of productivity. So I need to see you in your chair to make sure I know you're working. Otherwise, I don't trust that you're working. I've talked with many leaders who outright actually admit that. I can't see them. I don't know if they're working. Then there's also all kinds of you know, monitoring software that companies are using, trying to see, you know, if their people are working and counting the keystrokes, et cetera. All those sort of things that are happening. That is not trust. Right. And then the other thing is there's this just, you know, one thing is you got to pay for or somehow get an ROI in all this big office space that companies have, you know. So there's that drive to be able to utilize the physical space. There's an argument about we're not as creative or innovative because we're not actually bumping into each other, which is interesting. And I'm not going to refute that one per se. So there's a few things that I think that are pushing up against this. I do also think that there is a really strong human tendency to want to just go back to what we know. And instead of what, you know, looking for other things beyond what we've already been working from.
That's really intriguing. I think that there's two things that jump out to me in your answer. Answer them in whichever way order makes sense to you. But one thing you mentioned was about trust. And with there being so much work in the world and circles of that you and I may travel in about trust in the workplace. We have a book. I think is it Stephen Covey or maybe Ken Blanchard wrote, like, you know, work only moves at the speed of trust.
That's
so
Covey,
it's
yeah.
not like this, you know, it's not, hey, try this new thing, trust. Like, everybody knows that it's essential. So I'd be curious, like, why, when that's well documented, is that still playing such a large issue? And then I forgot my second one, but I am curious on the creativity thing, maybe exploring that a little bit, but the trust piece just strikes me as familiarity. Wouldn't you can make an argument that COVID and the pandemic and being forced to be remote, shouldn't that have like pushed us into a place where everybody's got at least enough experience to know if it can and will work? Whereas pre-pandemic, people could make claims that, oh, it would never work. This is the way it's always been. Well, you can't say that anymore. I don't think. How would you address the trust and COVID breaking us out of the way things have always been, but we're still pulled towards it?
Oh, a couple things. Let me start with the last point. So I think we more than demonstrated that we can be very productive working remotely during the pandemic and to be innovative and all those sort of things. Now, there's a segment of people that don't like to do that. They like the separation between home and work, and the commute is that, you know, intervention point, and they like that. So it isn't for everyone, but there are people that really, really want that for their desired work-life integration. So I think that we can forget about this notion of, you know, it doesn't work, because we found very distinctly that it does, and we can be extremely productive working remotely for many jobs, not all jobs. If you're, you know, on a frontline nurse caring for people in a hospital, of course we can't do that remotely, but there are so many jobs that we can. Now on the trust front, I did have Stephen M. R. Covey on my program, Working on Purpose, talking about one of his books on inspiration. And, you know, it really is that thing that greases the skids to results and relationships. I also, just a couple weeks ago, had Dr. Peter Kim on my show, and he has a brand new book out on really the science of trust. And I have never seen such an in-depth curation of how it works, how we build relationships, destroy and rebuild them through trust. It's phenomenal. And I would go on to say that many organizations are not fully leveraging the power of trust because they're not actually extending it first. Covey will even say that, extend it first. So I think there's a lot that we can do with this whole notion of trust. And there's many other things that I could say about that, but I don't know if you wanted to comment on what I just mentioned.
Well, no, number one, I want to make sure that we link to that episode. I'm I'm intrigued. Maybe I'll tune in on my run to that episode and hear about the science part. I always love blending in science with the things that we might consider art or squishy and intangible, right? Like a lot of the social sciences are considered in some circles. So if it's people on the remote front, and this is something I'm fairly opinionated about, and I know I'm supposed to be the interviewer and not have an opinion or something like that, but I spent years building my first company to be remote. And then I sold it right when the country locked down and helped that company go remote, change the tech stack, try to nurture culture. Cause you got to do things differently. You can't do the same things you did in person and expect them to work the exact same way. Do you think it's just, is it the change management of it all for the leaders? Because I can understand some workers want something different, and certainly they have a vote by going and finding another place to work. There's it's a strong applicants market. You can go and find something if you're skilled, in particular in tech and some of those things. But these orders are coming from the very top, right? They have a certain amount of control. These executives are probably in a position where they can, they're traveling, they're moving around. They almost are remote workers, especially to a lot of the people on their staff. Is it just, we don't want to manage the change that just feels like a bridge too far? And it feels too challenging, too great a weight to carry. I mean, I'm not trying to indict these leaders, by the way. I don't know what it's like to run a multi-billion dollar company. So I don't know what it's like to shoulder that weight. But I am curious if that's part of it. It's just the ship's so large. I don't want to turn it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of it. But I think the bigger issue here, Kenny, and this is something that I've talked about quite a bit and written about quite a bit, is that I don't think people really fully understand how fundamentally altered the world of society and work is in the last few years. What people don't understand is that plagues reorder society. So when you think about it, you go back to the bubonic plague of whenever that was, the 1300s, it yielded the Renaissance. The Spanish influenza of 1918 yielded the Roaring Twenties. So the great, the pandemic or the COVID pandemic yielded the great resignation. People said, I want more quality in my life. I want to choose how I spend my time, my one precious life. And that means I don't want to necessarily spend it in a commute or sitting in an office where I feel like I'm even not as productive as I can be at home because I'm a person that needs less sensory, input, whatever it might be. And so, I actually want my health. I want to be able to go for a run when I finish this interview. I want to be able to see my kids play their soccer games. And so before the pandemic, Kenny, what we all did was we organized our whole entire lives around work. Our work dictated where we lived, where our children went to school, and who we connected to largely. And now what's happened is people have really gotten present to what's important, and that what's important to them is, who do they care about? So what community do they want to be connected to? Where do they want to belong? And then wanting to organize around that. So, and then have a fluidity and sort of a person work integration. So now what I think is happening is that many, many leaders who probably are largely going to be in the Gen X or boomer still generations just haven't fully grasped how fast and deeply the world has changed. I think that's the biggest thing. So what's happening is they're going back to the stuff they used to always do, just going back to, to the Rolodex and the drawer and pulling out the old playbook, and they're pulling from that. And the problem is that is not going to work. They need a whole new playbook because what's happened is the world has incredibly elevated in consciousness and what they want from their lives, what they're willing to settle for, all those things.
Wow. There's a lot there. One thread I would be curious to pull on, maybe outside of this conversation that you mentioned about the sensory overload. There's some things that I learn in the course of my life and being a foster parent, where we learn about sensory and what kids need and how to monitor and manage that I think has been translated to a lot of adults who are trying to process through the trauma of the pandemic, in addition to just regular life trauma. and how they need to manage that. So that may be a separate topic another day. But I am curious because you used the term right before we hit the old record button, talking about how some things have become a train wreck in the workplace. So choo-choo, it's making me think of like Shogun's hibachi, where they do the little onion volcano and all of that. But I'm curious then, if we're thinking about this as a train wreck, and it largely has been, is this for the Gen X and the boomers, just having lived in the way that they were brought up and things that typify that generation? Because certainly you can't say all boomers, all Gen Xers are one right. way or another. But anecdotally, even in memes and videos, you know, you see boomers, Gen Xers are like, we survived this. We were tough. We just like took a licking and kept on ticking sort of mentality. And, you know, right or wrong, you know, they said that these millennials, zillennial, and every other, you know, alphabet that's coming after are softer. Although I might argue there's some things that we've endured that are a little different with the shift of technology. The world is just so much faster, right? So is there a train wreck in just a lack of empathy? Is it, I see it, I don't know what to do about it. Like, I don't even know where to get started to help these people. So let's just like keep moving and not sit here in it. Or is it just total like trauma, pain avoidance? And like, let's just go towards this, just pretend nothing happened.
Really yummy question, Kenny. Okay, so first
I've never gotten that feedback. We need to clip that. I'm putting it as a quote on the website.
You got it. Okay, so first we have to probably take a walk down memory lane and just recognize that probably most generations, when they look at the next one coming in, invariably say, oh my God, we're going to hell in a handbasket with this new next generation, right? Every right. one of them that comes in says something like that, like, oh, we would have done it like this. Well, from my vantage point, each generation makes us better as a human species, from my vantage point. So, you know, the boomers really taught us about, you know, what it is to be disciplined and spend a life of really building something and devoting yourself to it. They taught us that. And then the Xers came in and they taught us that, you know, that freedom has a lot of interest to it. So being able to choose your roles and when you're going to be at the places. But they also liked responsibility, but the freedom piece was important. And then the millennials, the Ys, came in and they taught us that we don't have to work 80 hours a week or even 60 hours a week for that matter, that a little bit of work-life balance is pretty important, and that we can and should try to do our work through our values by expressing our values through our work. And along comes Gen Z, the latest generation, and what they've taught us is that we should insist on doing work that is purposeful, that makes a difference in the world, and that we're doing something with our life to actually advance those causes. In my view, what you see there is not softness. You see an increase in elevation in consciousness. That's what I think is happening.
Wow. So is it the disconnect or unwilling to, I don't want to say evolve, because I think that's the wrong word, but I mean, growth is hard, understatement of the century, but when you've found a way that's worked for you, here's an example. I was having a discussion on this retreat I just got back from with some other leaders here in the area, and we were talking about personality. We took this assessment. We had a facilitator walk us through it. We're learning about each other. We're all fairly new to one another, and so we're trying to, you know, find out what are your strengths, what are mine. And they talked about just the refinement of personality. And my thing through some of my education and my own personal work that I've done is getting to a place where your personality isn't actually who you are. But it was a way in which for you to make your way in the world and survive for a period of time. And then later on, at some point in life, you get to decide, well, is that it? Or do I really want to take off the mask? It's really hard to do that. And the reason is, And I find this difficult. I'll speak for myself. The reason I find it difficult sometimes to take off the mask of, say, achievement or class clown or know-it-all or whatever it may be, is it actually worked quite well for a long period of time. And so for me to say, well, yeah, I should elevate my consciousness. I should evolve my thinking. I should push into this area of growth. I don't fully understand, but it seems to resonate with people and or with me, and there's something there, but I can't put language to it. But why should I leave something that's working? Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Which I think is actually a false thing. Like, did it really work? I mean, it did something, but was it really working for you? Do you see that as maybe that's part of it, is they've seen something that's worked and it's worked really well. It worked through their generations and the evolution that you just described, which I think is beautiful. And I've never heard someone describe it that way. Do you think that holds them back? Like, past success is the greatest enemy of future success, sort of thing?
I think there's a few things going on here, Kenny. I do think that past success gets in our way because we live in a world that is profoundly and constantly changing. You can't go back and just hang on to whatever you did last year or 5 years ago. You just have to keep transforming and evolving to keep up to date. That's all there is. So I think it takes energy and effort to do that. And a lot of organizations don't put effort into ongoing training of their people or their leaders. So that's part of the resistance piece. But I think it also goes back to what you said before. You used an E word before, and I think that that's really important. It's empathy. So I think, you know, what's happening also, even just from the generational vantage point or even from the vantage point of leaders versus workers, is, and there's a lot of stuff being put out on the importance of emotional intelligence in leaders today and being empathetic, et cetera. And there's a reason for that. So I think that there is a general lack of empathy of just how overwhelmed and burnt out people have, you know, been building for decades, and that they want to be able to have a little bit more semblance of, you know, a work-life integration and, you know, some semblance that there is a quality to their lives that doesn't have them on the hamster wheel all the time, because we did work very hard for productivity for years and years and years. So I think that there is a missing of empathy. There's an opportunity to develop more empathy and emotional intelligence in leaders and for themselves and into their workplace. I think there's an opportunity for them to flex beyond what's easy and natural for me and go looking to see what's in it for somebody else. What's their story? What do they bring, kind of thing? Just like you were saying, appreciating somebody else's strengths. The generations can each teach each other. So I think that there's an awful lot going on here that adds to the resistance. And a lot of it just comes down to not being prepared for the, you know, the blast that's come their way as leaders. And I really have a lot of empathy for them because, man, that's a tough space to be in.
Right. And it seems a more precarious, I don't know. It takes a lot more skill, I think, now to balance that tension.
It does.
It is definitely not for the faint of heart. A lot of people like the benefits of being an leader. They don't like the weight of and responsibility. That's a bit of a shock. I actually had a client recently that was talking to me about that, is just, oh yeah, I'd love to do this and I want to be here and everything. And then they get promoted in that place. They're like, oh, sweet Jesus. Okay. So this is what you've been carrying. This is what's been going on. And they're like, oh, this is not, I was just firing stuff off. Like, if I was the person in charge, I'd be doing X, Y, and Z. And then you get there and you realize it's not quite so simple and straightforward. So how then should leaders be thinking about this big transition that sort of was forced on us? I heard a leader say once, is like, it's not that people don't like change, because a lot of people say, well, people don't like the change. Well, yeah, they do. They love a promotion, a new car, a new haircut, a new house. Like, they love those things. They either don't like change forced on them, or they don't like the way they're being asked to change or to change. So what then should leaders be thinking, or how should they be reframing this narrative in their mind about change so that it can be productive and they are being empathetic, as you described, because there's a greater need for that. There's probably a separate conversation about the buildup of burnout. As a matter of fact, that'd be a pretty cool title. I ought to write that down. But how should these leaders who are tasked with guiding a mixed generation of people into this next phase of whatever we're in on the early days of post-pandemic, what's going to help them shake things off and move forward and really help people?
Yeah, I have a pretty strong view on that matter. And there's a lot of consensus with it as well. It's not just me. What it really comes down to is creating destination workplaces where people have a curated experience of being able to contribute their talents, meaningfully connect with their team members, feel like they belong, that the work that they do matters, and they can see how it threads through into the mission of the organization, and that they're learning. So we're increasingly seeing the idea of getting rid of job and job descriptions and employing tours of duty, a lot like consulting companies do, and giving people the chance to literally really have an experience. It's a curated experience inside an employer that is designed to really elicit everything that they've got while teaching them, growing them, and, you know, onto another level. So, you know, this whole notion of curated experiences, what we learned in the pandemic was the power and the value of experience. And now we're very selective about what kind of experiences that we want and the quality that we have. So in my view, in not just creating workplaces, you know, humane workplaces, but really creating this idea of a curated experience, a destination workplace. And in that workplace, of course, they will be led by inspirational leaders who have learned emotional intelligence, who know how to communicate, who know how to create a workplace where meaning is activated and purpose is actually lived. I think that's the answer.
Well, I love that. I think the fluidity that you mentioned and creating the experience, I think that brings up another question of, I'm trying to think if I had an example recently of this, but if you can just, we talk about scale, everybody wants to like, how's that going to scale? How's that going to scale? Right. Which is mostly, it sounds great, but I think largely what people are saying is how can we do that as efficiently as possible? And it's really about productivity, which you had mentioned, like, yes, we were ushered into an era of unprecedented productivity, but we probably overdid it. Just a little bit, just a little. And we're swaying that back and really helping people on an individual level, recognizing what each person needs and really creating that dignity. You know, I have it on my shirt. I talk about it. Some is elevating human dignity in the workplace should be a chief goal of all workplaces, whether it's stated or not. And they may use different language, but it feels like a bi-directional maximizing of value, right? Like the company gets maximum productivity, quote unquote, right? From the employee. The employee or team member, it gets maximum benefit, education, compensation, all those sort of things. Like you said, an experience. But an experience doesn't feel scalable, right? That's, If you've got a, you know, people will turn you away from what they'll call like a custom for all sort of service offering, let alone a employee or employment offering. How do people think through that without it going like, I've got, you know, we mentioned some very large named companies and they've got employees in the thousands, and that might even be harder. How do they think through, well, I want to create this experience, but I can't spend 80 hours handcrafting the experience for people?
Mm-hmm. That's the million-dollar question, my friend. So from my vantage point, this is what's happening here, is we are in this place of reaching for that next shelf. I mean, what I mean by that is, as leaders and people that are there to steward our people, we are reaching and learning. And so learning how to create you know, even in, whether it's a virtual or a hybrid workplace, I think part of the opportunity here is learning how to better help people to better collaborate, to better connect, mm-hmm. so we can have that, you know, those, you know, accidental run-intos, which is where a lot of innovation comes from, and be able to get people to be able to give people those experiences. Like, I don't want to miss out on being in the office because we're doing this. So I think there's ways to do that. It requires creativity, strategy, thinking, and certainly elevation. But I think if we focus on the idea of scale, we're going to miss the whole point. And that's what got us to this problem in the first place, because organizations were built around this engine. So we strapped the human resources and put them around this engine that kept it, you know, going round and round and round at the expense of their souls. But we were strong and efficient as an organization. So I think if we want to continue on that route of focused on scaling, that's where we're going to get to. So now what we have to get to is really being much more creative and much more dynamic about utilizing things like artificial intelligence to help us get rid of those drudgery sort of tasks that no one likes to do, so they can bring their higher talents in. That's one way that will already help. And then really once you get that engine going where people are really feeling like, man, they're growing, they're learning, they're contributing, they matter. That energy and that effort is going to probably beat a lot of the scale stuff that employers were trying to do by forcing people into pegs or forcing them into jobs. And so now what we're also seeing is that instead of doing jobs or doing a job, that we're focused on the outcomes. And so if we start focusing on what are we trying to produce here versus what's this person's job, that already opens a whole other way of looking at utility and efficiency.
Yeah, wow. I really like that. I'd be curious your thoughts on, I can't remember who said it, but I've heard it on a few different podcasts. They talk about someone is being quoted that at our current, like it was back in the 70s or 80s, that as technology was improving, it was opening things up and it would make it so that what currently took 40 hours might only take us 20 hours. And then we're going to have this life of leisure and high productivity in a compressed amount of time. And instead, what we did was we made those advancements. We got more productive, but instead of taking more time to nourish our souls, build connections, grow as just all around humans, we took that time and made ourselves more productive. We backfilled it with more work. So what then, and this may not, I don't know, we'll ever solve this. What then do we do when we are saying, yeah, let's leverage AI, let's get higher order thinking from our people, get rid of the menial. But we sort of have been doing bits of that over time. We just keep backfilling it. And then something else becomes the new menial. Is there something, a trigger, a failsafe, a way of approaching those sort of things that can stop us from that death spiral? Because that's eventually what it leads into. We get excited about new tech, AI, ChatGPT, what have you. Everybody's excited. It's either going to threaten all of our jobs or it's going to make our lives easier. Either way, we're all, you know, have a sense of urgency. But now we might just be back to working 40 to 60 hours doing a different kind of work.
What comes to my mind to that question or topic, Kenny, is I think that it's really critical to continue associating with people that are aspiring for something more. You know, whether it is conscious capitalism, whether it is organizations like Humanities Team, who I had in my program a couple of weeks ago. There are so many instances of people, organizations that are really aspiring to do things on a higher level, making the world a better place through the world of work. And I think as long as we stay somehow connected to one of those organizations as a leader, as a company, we can still continue to drink from that hose of that higher level thinking. My last chapter of my book of The Great Revitalization talks about spiritual intelligence in the world of work and workplace. And believe it or not, it's actually being measured today. So spiritual intelligence speaks to higher level values like compassion, love, peace, awe. So more and more organizations are starting to see the utility even of these sorts of things. Because think about that. If you're working in that kind of environment, how might that be able to encourage creativity and innovation and belongingness, all these things that we've identified. So if we can just find a way to stay connected somehow, stay either in association or in membership or reading, learning, listening to podcasts that talk about these things, I think we've got a good chance of not being so quick to go back into that downward negative spiral.
Yeah. It sounds like you're saying that attitude, the downward spiral, that to some extent that might always be around in certain people and people groups. The way to sort of pull yourself out of that is to associate with those that aren't sort of you're the average or some of the five people you spend the most time with, sort of thing. Or, you know, if you're around five millionaires, you'll become the sixth. If you're around five, you know, really empathetic people, you'll likely become the sixth, sort of thing. Is that Yes. fair to say?
Absolutely, Kenny. Absolutely. And we need that. We need those things as reminders. And also, too, you know, I like to speak. I'm an inspirational speaker. I like to speak about topics that inspire people. We need inspiration. It's part of, it's actually a vital source of energy for us. So hearing about, listening to these stories of people that have crafted their companies so that all stakeholders are being served in a dynamic way that's lifting, that's incredibly compelling. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm sure that there's a great many things we could keep talking on again. And I have many questions because I treat podcasts somewhat like, you know, free therapy or Q&A times. But this has been incredibly helpful. What if somebody is wanting to take a first step, a baby step, to get rolling and being either that kind of person, associating with those kind of people to really elevate and enlighten themselves, where would you recommend that they start that journey?
Well, I think the easiest thing in my own backyard is if they go to my website, elisecortez.com, I have actually created, I think it's three pages. It's a three-page assessment on the best practices that are really required to meet the standards of today's discerning workforce. So people can go and download that three pages. They can do the assessment. They can score their organization immediately.
Wow. Okay. Excellent. And I'm sure that there's some follow-up if somebody wants to keep pursuing that, to ask you questions or engage in a program. Well, that is going to be incredibly helpful. It's very generous. Three page assessments, no joke. So take advantage of that, people, before she wises up and starts charging you for it. if people wanted to connect with you, learn more about you, your writings, what you're doing, where would you send them?
Maybe two places. My direct website, which again is elisecortez.com, A-L-I-S-E, cortez.com. And then, of course, LinkedIn. I'm very easy to find there, too. Either of those will land you in a place where you can talk to me and connect with me.
Fantastic. And we'll have those linked up in the notes below. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Cortez, for coming on. I hope this won't be our last conversation that's recorded, but I appreciate your time. And as always, if you want to change the way you lead, change the way you think.